Welcome to another episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. On the show, we discuss cybersecurity trends and the way those trends affect the work of InfoSec professionals. Today's podcast episode is a webinar entitled SolarWinds Supply Chain Breach, Insight from the Trenches, and is hosted by InfoSec instructor Keetron Evans. In brief, FireEye discovered a global attack targeting customers of SolarWinds' Orion product line. The attack trojanized SolarWinds' Orion business software updates and distributed a malware called Sunburst. The attack spread widely and ferociously across public and private industries. In this webinar, you'll learn the full details of the attack, immediate actions you can take to protect yourself, industry responses, and a demo of Snort, Memory Forensics, and Zeek. Keetron also took live questions from the audience. If you enjoyed Keetron's presentation, I hope you'll also consider checking out CyberWork Applied, a new series of hands-on training modules. Keetron can help you learn new cybersecurity skills and show you how those skills apply to real-world scenarios. You can find CyberWork Applied at infosecinstitute.com/learn. And now I'll let Keetron take over and fill you in on SolarWinds Supply Chain Breach, Insight from the Trenches.
So we will be talking a little bit about what happened, at least what we know so far. And, you know, this is changing hourly, right? So even since we started this webinar, there's probably been some changes. So we'll kind of bring you up to speed to where we are now. Also, we'll talk about some immediate actions you can take now, because really part of the impetus as far as why I decided to do this was so many students, associates, and other people that I do work with on a regular basis were reaching out to me saying, hey, we need help, like, you know, just some basic help, like we don't know where to start. And I would say, oh, well, you know, contact your SIM provider and your MSSP. And they were like, well, we're a medium business, we don't have a real SIM, or we have one, but we don't use it that much, and all of these things. So I tried to figure out a way that I could reach out and help as many people as possible in the shortest amount of time with this information. So part of what we're doing here, especially in the demo, is to make sure that even if you don't understand your SIM or don't have access to it or don't have the expertise that's available to you right now, because we're all really, really busy right now, I'm just giving you some things that you can do. Every single person can go and do these things just following these steps right now. You're not going to be reinventing the SIM wheel or reinventing your IDS or anything like that, but it's just some basic things that you can do individually, specifically when we're looking at the host that's probably compromised, like the SolarWinds server, like I'm going to show you some things you can do there, and some other things that aren't so obvious. You know, there's been some lessons I've learned over the last few days that as far as like what should be being logged and that type of thing to look for this these IOCs related to this particular threat vector. We're also going to briefly look at some industry responses, because some of them have been very, very good. And then we'll get into the demo part. And I'm kind of using the demo as more of a, hey, here's some things you can do. By the way, they don't only apply to this particular incident. Take these skills, take what I'm showing you here, practice it as you're dealing with this incident, and then use it in ones that come after. Because one of the things that's becoming more real to me right now is this is not something that's going to go away next week. You know, this is not going to be one of those breaches that you hear about and then a couple weeks later nobody's thinking about it because it's gone. This is going to continue to grow. I think the IOCs that we know about now are going to continue to increase, specifically when we talk about horizontal movement, post, you know, initial compromise activities and things like that. As we dig in and as we see behaviors, we're going to be able to release newer IOCs and other things that you can look at. And for those of you that, again, don't have a big, big response team or big security team, I'm going to try to give you some techniques, some tools that you don't have to spend money on, and some processes that you can easily bring this new information into as these new IOCs come out and continue to keep trucking along to kind of help on the response. Because I believe this is one of the big ones that is really going to require response efforts from us, the industry as a whole, versus one or two big companies figuring it all out. We're going to have to really be in together on this one. All right. And then, of course, at the end, the best part, we'll do a live Q&A. So what happened, you know, as you know, as you've read, FireEye discovered a global attack targeting customers of SolarWinds Orion product line. You know, we're tracking actors behind this campaign as UNC 2452. This is a direct statement from FireEye, and we've got the sources quoted at the bottom there. The attack Trojanized SolarWinds Orion business software in order to distribute malware called Sunburst. Or that's what some of us are calling it. And there's a couple of different names out there for it now. The post-exploit activity, including horizontal movement, has been prevalent, like for some organizations, and for some, there's been nothing, you know, aside from the initial beacon that it makes out to kind of phone home to say, I'm here. For some places, we've seen nothing at all after that, you know, as they've kind of been lucky, I guess you could say. The campaign is widespread. It's affecting public and private sector organizations, and FireEye is releasing signatures to detect this threat actor and supply chain attack in the wild. So you can go right to their GitHub page that I've got linked to there, and you can get the countermeasures, and you can get the IOC signatures, the snort signatures, and things like that. And again, one of the reasons I'm doing this is I sent this information to about 200 people over the last 72 hours, and a lot of them responded and said, yeah, this is all great, but I have no clue what to do with these signatures. Like, I've never used Snort before. I don't know what a Yara scan is. I don't know what a Yara rule is. So what do I do with this? So I'm going to kind of put some of that into perspective and show you how to use that per this very specific incident. You know, it's not going to be a generic, you know, this is how you use tools. It's going to be focused on this incident, and hopefully you'll take it and get some value from it. And we can move on to the next one now. So key findings so far, and again, this is fluid and changing constantly. It appears that some of the malware has interest in, or some of the indicators show that they have interest in cloud services you're using and the wireless networks that you may be connected to or using. They're collecting apparently that information for some reason, or at least they're, you know, interacting with the parts of the malware that can get that information. It looks for SolarWinds tools that collects registrant email addresses and time zone info. So remember I said we're looking for this to the IOCs to expand. When you look at your SolarWinds installation, try to figure out or find out which email address you put in there as the registrant email, because I haven't seen this happen yet, but I'm suspecting the reason they're collecting that is there may be some follow-on phishing attacks against whatever that registrant email is. I mean, I can kind of see a, you know, here's the latest update from SolarWinds. Here's a new message from SolarWinds. Open this PDF. This is our official statement on the financial damages that we're going to help you out with. I can tell you for sure, I know of a lot of network and security administrators that are already talking to legal and stuff like that. So that would be a great phishing vector. You know, send an email apparently from SolarWinds to that registrant email address that says, here's what we're going to do to compensate you for your debt, for your loss. I could see a lot of people clicking on that, a lot of very smart security people clicking on that and opening that communication. So just as a warning, again, we've not seen this happen yet, but based on what I've seen from what I've saw in memory with it trying to collect registrant emails, I think that may be one reason for that. So definitely look out for that. Find out what registrant email you use and monitor that thing. You know, look, don't open any attachments or anything like that that come into it. It also has a domain generation algorithm for subdomains. Like, this is all public knowledge as well. You can see that it's doing this primarily so that it generates a unique, fully qualified domain name for each callback out to the C2 servers, or at least that's what it looks like from what we see here. And this is all information that you can get from FireEye and also from McAfee. They've got a detailed breakdown of what they've seen from the malware in memory. They've managed to reverse engineer a big part of it, and they've got details at the link that we see here. And again, I just want to be clear with, you know, if you're not FireEye, if you're not McAfee, like all of you other vendors out there that I partner with, that I do work with, that I'm working with right now, you know, I've got 6 Zoom meetings on mute of different customers that I'm helping out and working with. And there's a lot of coordination that goes into that. I'm working with different SIM vendors, different AV vendors and HIPS vendors. I probably created more SIM dashboards in this week than I have in my entire life across 6 or 7 different SIM solutions. So we're not trust me, I promise you, we're not leaving out the importance of any vendor's contribution here, because everybody's doing a really good job of contributing. So let's move on to the next one here. So just to kind of put it in perspective for some of you that may not be extremely technical. So what happens is the SolarWinds product, the Orion product, there's a way that just like if you imagine Windows Update, you know, basically your SolarWinds server will go out to this update server at SolarWinds and pull down updates, you know, for you to just keep your software up to date. What happened was this group penetrated this server. I don't want to try to get into too much details about how, but that's public. Some of that's public information as well. But they penetrated this server, made the malware part of their distribution. So now, as you were getting these updates between, you know, I think March and June is the time frame there, you were getting copies of this malware as well. In addition to that, the malware was signed. So your server and Windows specifically said the malware is fine. It's part of the trusted package, so it's okay to run. So effectively, it's been running since you did that update. Now, there's a lot of questions about backwards backhaul, like if they came in here, how far back did they go into SolarWinds Enterprise? Did they actually come into the enterprise and come this way? There's a lot of questions around that I don't want to go too far off into those discussions. If you have questions about that, you can ask at the end, but I don't want to get too distracted by that. Now, one thing I want to point out that's clear here, and part of why I'm really hesitant to try to point any blame or anything like that, is we in the security industry, we've told people for years, one of the best things you can do is make sure you have your, keep your software up to date, make sure you have your updates turned on so that when there's a new patch or a new security update that comes out, you get that thing right away. So we've actually encouraged people to have these automatic updates turned on. That's no secret. You know, if you go back and look at any top 10 security recommendations for the last 10 years, one of them is to keep your software up to date. And one of the best ways that we've always recommended to do that is have the automatic updates turned on. So again, you know, we all have some part to play in this, and we're just trying to really figure out, trying to help you figure out some ways to navigate through it. So that's what happened. Some government organizations were compromised, some private corporations were compromised, and some academics were compromised. A couple of universities that I know specifically, I'm sure there's a lot more, were compromised as a result of this as well. And that's what the overall picture kind of looks like. And by the way, the graphics here, I do want to thank Camille and Jeff and InfoSec in general, because we kind of put this together really quickly, and it would absolutely not be possible at all without them doing what they've done here and InfoSec in general. So this is a graphic I created. You can tell because it kind of looks a little ugly. So anytime you see graphics that look like graphics vomit, it's, you can rest assured I created it. But then when it looks smooth, like let's go to the next slide, Camille. When it looks all pretty like that, you know Camille did it. So you can kind of, if you want to keep yourself entertained, you can try to figure out which graphics I created versus which ones Camille created.
You're giving me too much credit there.
Rest of the presentation here. So as far as responding, what horizontal movements are detectable? Like we're going to talk about some things along those lines. I'm also going to share some things with you that I've run into with some clients. And again, not to kind of hang my clients out or say they did something wrong. Look, we all live in an imperfect world, and we have to do things sometimes just to get from day to day as far as getting work done, getting the network security and stuff like that. So I'm going to share with you some things that we've seen that made detecting these horizontal movements a little bit more difficult than it had to be. We're also going to talk about patterns that may not be talked about in the public domain yet. And we're going to look at implementing countermeasures and IOC search criteria with Snort from scratch. So another comment that I've gotten a lot in private LinkedIn messages and also just in emails is like, look, I don't know what to do with these Snort rules. I tried to get it working. So I'm going to show you how to take these rules and put them into a Snort installation. But we'll talk about installing Snort, put them in the Snort installation so that you can immediately have visibility into any traffic that's meeting any of this rule criteria. I'm not going to do a snort rule writing class. Like, we don't need to do that. You just need to be able to get these rules into a snort installation, specifically a network snort installation, or even if you don't have that level of access, if you can install something on the SolarWinds box itself, you may be able to put snort there or put snort between that device and the rest of the network and look for things going out and coming in based on these rules. That's something you can do, you know, while you're waiting. I mean, for example, in a couple of these instances, I had to wait hours to get access to the SIMs or get admin access to the SIMs so that I was able to create dashboards, because corporations have change control and they have policies as far as what you have to go through to get to these. But I will say that I think I've seen records broken this week on how fast I got VPN access to organizations. Literally, it happened within, you know, minutes for some of these places, whereas usually it takes a few days. So these are some of the things we'll look at, and I'll talk about that as we move on to the next one here. So some things you can do to take action immediately: go to the FireEye GitHub, get the IOCs and countermeasures, get them down. You can even do that right this second if you want, because I am going to be showing you what to do with those in the demonstration. Implement it in your environment if you have privilege and all that. So just to be clear, anything I'm telling you to do here, asking you to do, or making a suggestion to do, you need to make sure that you have permission, privileges, and the legal authorization to install these tools or put anything in your environment that I'm telling you to put here. Now, we're not putting anything in here that's dangerous or, you know, gonna necessarily expose the organization, but you wanna make sure that you have permission to be doing it. Check with your preferred security vendors. A lot of them have these rules and they're updating their products in real time. I can tell you, the reason I'm able to help respond to five or six different instances at the same time is because of the, for me, never seen before coordination between different vendors. You know, I've been on the phone since 1 o'clock this morning with different, even competing vendors. You know, I've been in one call with six or seven different competing vendors in there, and we're all sharing information to kind of make this thing, you know, make it something that we can take and manage. Keep up to date on new developments. Like, there is no better thing you can do other than staying plugged into what's going on. You can follow the media some, but I recommend you follow, you know, FireEye or McAfee or any of your preferred trusted security vendors. They're pretty much going to have the information and be able to provide it to you. And you can also follow me on LinkedIn. I'm updating stuff pretty regularly on there, and I'm even thinking about maybe just keeping that LinkedIn thread that spawned this meeting as a going thread and just kind of post updates on there, almost like TikTok, where you can post a video response to somebody's comment. I think I might post video updates of new IOCs and things like that that we find to kind of try to get you the information as quickly as possible. Or we might do something with that as well on the back end, Camille, to kind of make it a portal for people to come and get this information from. So we'll talk logistically about that after the meeting. All right, let's move on.
So before we move on, Keetron, can you confirm the acronym IOC?
It's Indicator of Compromise.
Perfect.
So it means some signature. It could be actually a hash. It could be a piece of data in network traffic. It could be a file or a binary that's running in memory, or it could just be behavior. Sometimes behavior is an indicator of compromise. So when we say IOC, that's what we mean. Another play on that is indicator of attack, right? So if we see evidence that the threat actor is trying to get in, we call that an indicator of attack and not necessarily indicator of compromise. Indicator of compromise means they've made it in. They're in there. Here's the indicator that they've compromised your organization.
Great. Thanks for confirming that.
Mm-hmm. So some industry responses. So FireEye published IOCs for everyone to use, and a lot of us are working from these IOCs and, you know, some others as well. Like, we've kind of, again, we've got like a back channel, some of us, of communication to where, as we're seeing different horizontal movement type things, we're kind of ripping that stuff out, desensitizing it and trying to share it. The problem with that, putting that stuff in the public domain, is you have to be really careful when you're taking these malware samples and these traffic captures and things like that, because there's always the risk of sensitive corporate or agency information in those packet captures or in those memory dumps and things like that. So that's why you don't see us rushing to just throw this stuff out there and say, hey, take a look at this, because it's really difficult to sanitize that in a way that we can share it with you easily. Now, I've got some VMs that I've built here where I pull some stuff in and sanitize it that you'll be able to see, and you'll be able to take that and, you know, transfer it kind of right over to your environment. Also, Microsoft. So they invalidated the malware certificates. And what that means is this, because I know that might sound a little technical, but it's really not. When you write a piece of software, write a piece of code, one of the things that you can do for more people in the world to trust your code is you can go and get a digital certificate for it, right? You can, you know, get your code signed and you get a certificate that from a third-party vendor like VeriSign or someone like that, that says we verified that we know who this person is, where this code came from, so you can always trace it back to the origin. And they have a valid certificate. So one thing Microsoft did is they invalidated a certificate. So immediately, if you have your Windows devices configured to not trust code that does not have a valid certificate, this stuff won't run on your Windows machines. So this is an example of where if you're already following sound basic security principles, this is going to be a huge help for you. Something that you get the advantage of from not really doing much. If you're trusting any code and allowing any code to run, then this may not be as relevant to you, especially if you're trusting code to run that doesn't have a signature or does not have a certificate that's critical to your organization, because you can't then blanketly say, today we're going to stop allowing unsigned code to run, right? Because you might break some critical processes. But if you've already been moving in that direction, this should definitely be a big win for you. They've also been sinkholing the domains. So what that really means is one of the things that this malware does is once it starts running in the environment, it will make a call out to a domain that these threat actors own, and it will kind of either A, let them know that it made it into your environment and it's phoning home, or there may be some exfiltration or something like that going on. So what Microsoft did is they actually went out, used some legal maneuvering and used their power to basically take over or get control of these domains and sinkhole them. So that means that when the malware calls out to these domains, it's not going anywhere. It's not gonna get back to the CNC servers that these threat actors control. So again, a big, big, big help right there for all of us. You know, whether or not you're allowing signed code or not, that right there was a big, big move that tremendously helped us, at least for this particular piece of malware. And more on that later, because as we're learning things, we're finding that this may be just the tip of the iceberg. Also updated Windows Defender to look for Sunburst. And this is something that you're seeing slowly happen across the industry. Every major host-based intrusion prevention provider or, you know, antivirus vendor, firewall vendor, whatever you want to call it, they're updating these signatures to where it can look for these behaviors and these IOCs. So this is, you know, if you have a big enterprise and you have all this equipment in place and you trust it and you know it's been performing for you, some of these things are going to happen automatically for you. But when I do the demo, I'm going to assume you have nothing or you don't know where it is and you need to build something quickly in your environment to look for these things right now. Those are the people that I'm really doing the demos for. All right, and we can move on. So some industry responses continued here. McAfee shared detailed reverse engineering intelligence, and I put that link on a previous slide. You can go see that. This is being updated pretty regularly as well. And there are so many others in the industry, associates that I know, my personal network, people that do the same thing that I do on a day-to-day basis. We're constantly sharing information as we're allowed to do that. And there's countless managed security service providers, which is what the MSSP is. SIM providers, you know, that are contributing really, really valuable information and coordination here. Contributions are growing by the minute. You know, as I said, I can't remember the last time I've created so many dashboards and taken so many second looks and looked at different, inputs and outputs on these different pieces here. But this is all made possible by these SIM vendors, by these MSSPs, as they are frequently sharing information with us and kind of bending their backs, going above and beyond to make it to where we can, you know, get the flexibility that we need to do what we need to do. Okay. So let's move on here.
Perfect. So as I transfer the screen share here to Keytron, as he loads up his screen share, I wanted to touch base on a couple of questions. So a few of the audience members, I see you all asking for links and that sort of thing. We will be sending out the slide deck that contains the links that we're talking about, and my colleague Jeff is going to be pasting some of those in the chat as well. We'll also make sure that you get the recording of this presentation later on so that you can reference this and the slides. So just wanted to clarify that. It looks like Keytron has the demo ready to go for us now.
So that's it for the demo part. I'm going to take it back to Camille there.
Perfect. Thanks, Keytron. And I think I speak for everyone thanking for the very in-depth demo there, figuring out ways that we can, again, start to remedy this situation that a lot of people are struggling with, maybe how to address. So with that, I want to start with some questions. We've got a ton of great questions. So some of them I'm going to be kind of combining here. First one, how safe are these open source tools that you are using and kind of sharing with us here?
I mean, they're safe enough that all of us, most of us in the industry use them, you know, and the fact that it's open source gives us a little bit of assurance because you can look at the source code. That's what open source means, is you can actually parse the source code yourself to see if there's anything bad in there. But things like Snort, Volatility, Zeek, these are, and Wireshark, these are staples of the community. So if they were going to be Trojan and backdoored, pretty much every incident response and threat hunting professional would be Trojaned right now. Yeah, I was careful not to pick things that has a reputation already.
Right. No, sounds good. Thank you. I'm going to go to a question that was in the LinkedIn thread, where this whole conversation kind of started. So this was from Robert, and he said, what has been the real impact? Is it stolen files, locked files, stolen PII? Do you have any insight onto what's happening with your clients or others in the industry?
So it varies. You know, initially we kind of thought that if you weren't government, if you weren't DOD or somebody like that, didn't have anything to worry about. But we've seen varying degrees of concern. Like there are certain folders and things. There's definitely been some HR information that's been accessed apparently, okay, you know, by some of the threat actors. Now this is stuff that I'm not going to put this out in a like a public statement or anything or as a public document, because this is stuff that we suspect, we have high suspicions of, but it's not been 100% confirmed yet. But, you know, we're like 90% sure that that's what's going on. There's definitely been some of that. There are some organizations that are getting ready to, you know, we're working with their legal teams right now on their PR teams to get ready to release statements about stuff. And I don't want to get into about things being accessed and taken potentially. So as the weeks come forward, as the weeks roll on, you're going to start hearing about more impact. But do I think there's going to be significant impact? I absolutely do, from what I'm seeing so far. It's just not come out yet because the lawyers haven't blessed it yet.
Sure. We'll leave it at that for now. Thank you. Okay, another question that was asked kind of in the beginning of the presentation and I thought was interesting. This person said SolarWinds Orion is a brand name and not the underlying technology. Can you shed some light on the type of underlying technology that was actually breached here? And do you think other brands are at risk for this?
I do think other brands are. For example, one of the competitors for SolarWinds is a product called What's Up Gold. And pretty much all of these product lines, like What's Up Gold, like SolarWinds, their primary function is to sit on your network, interact with every device on your network, and kind of give you real-time statistics as to the uptime of your devices, the health of your devices. Did someone just put a new device on the network? Is this device not responding to pings in a reasonable amount of time? This, you know, hundreds of different kinds of statistics. These things are keeping track of on the environment. And to be quite honest with you, most of these tools like SolarWinds, they have the ability to actually change things on your devices. You know, it works on the principle of one of the protocols that it uses is a protocol called SNMP. And SNMP really is designed to allow you to just query devices and ask them questions. But SNMP also has ability for you to change that information on a device if you have the what we call the private community string, or the kind of like the supervisor community string or supervisor administrative password to the SNMP protocol. And one of the things that hasn't been touched on yet, and I appreciate that question, whoever asked it, is no one's thought about that. No one's brought that to the forefront. Well, if they've got the SolarWinds software, they've got control of that, this thing has SNMP read-write access, what else has been changed in the environment? Now, we've asked that question in meetings, and we've made an effort, put it on the list of things to check out, but it's just so much to get down to that. We haven't even gotten close to that point on the list yet. But that's a great question.
Perfect.
And I think anybody that has that type of software, network management, network optimization software, this could have happened.
Sure. I'm going to follow up with a question from Jeanette. If you are not using one of the products that we know are affected, would you still investigate and look for IOCs?
I absolutely would. Okay. Just because if you'd asked me that yesterday, I might have said no. Or if you'd asked me that Wednesday, I might have said no. But again, as we are seeing that there is more and more of vectors, and this is just one, SolarWinds was just one, you know, I would say yes. If you, because you just got this knowledge, right? Like I just gave you information that we actually charge a lot of money to teach people, right? I just put it out here for free. So if you got it, you might as well go and use it, right? And just to kind of check yourself. These are things that you maybe should be doing anyways on a somewhat regular basis, once a quarter or something like that, just to kind of check yourself, even if you got outside vendors supposedly doing it. Because one thing that happened is one of my customers last night said, look, we've got this SIEM vendor and this firewall vendor and this WAF vendor and all these people saying that they've got these rules. They're checking for these things now. We don't have to worry about it. Can you just check that? So I stood up stuff in the environment and started sending out probes and things like that. And sure enough, the emails just lit up. You know, all these vendors sending emails like, oh, there's a device that's compromised. And they just wanted to have some assurance that like they're telling us to go to sleep and don't worry about it. But we want to know if there is something that's firing off, are they really going to know about it? And how soon will they tell us? So we did a little test like that, and it went really well. So definitely, even if you don't have these products, I would strongly recommend you just take some time to go and do these types of things that we're talking about now and see what you can find. Even if it's not these particular IOCs, you can go out and find IOCs for every piece of major malware that's been distributed in the last 5 years. Just start going through some of those and seeing the ones that are likely to be in your environment. Maybe check for those. If you're a financial organization or bank or something, like a small community bank, or you're a hospitality industry IT person or something like that, you can go out and research what's the malware that's being populated in the hospitality industry. Look at the Marriott breach, for example. Like there's some great things to learn about all of these breaches. Go get some of that stuff, bring that in, and see if you see those IOCs. So again, what I tried to do here is the techniques and tools that I showed you should apply to more than just this particular SolarWinds breach, but you should be able to use it for other things, and you should also be able to use it exactly as I showed to look for this specific IOCs.
Perfect. Thank you. Question that I saw that I want to go to next, and bear with me as I scroll here because there's quite a few questions. The question was related to if we had ever seen IOCs against network hardware.
Yes. In this particular case, not so much, but have I ever used it? Many, many times.
Okay. Thank you. So the next question I want to go to is from Thomas, and he asked, to what extent do you believe the full scope of this breach is understood as of today?
What percent? Man, that's a really on the spot, tough question right there. You know what? I would probably say 15%, and I'm giving us a lot of credit. I'm giving us in the trenches a lot of credit there. It's maybe 15%, could be less, because again, I think as the weeks go on, we're going to see more and more, you know, scarier horizontal movement that we've not been able to identify yet.
Right. And, you know, so you're expecting weeks or months of needing to eradicate the issues that are undiscovered yet.
Yeah, I'm expecting us to continuously release like new information about new IOCs and things like that. And I really, again, I like the way that FireEye decided to share this information with everyone and not wait until like some imaginary endpoint and then say, oh, here's everything we found over the last 6 months. They're kind of doing it in real time, which is what I'm doing here.
Right. And as far as timeline of this, we've had a couple of questions related to this. And we all know kind of the statistic of if someone is going to be hacking your network or that sort of thing, that they might sit on the network for a long time before they actually make any moves. So we all know that. How long do you think that this has been around?
I don't have any evidence to really point to past March, but I do have evidence that makes me believe that some of it's definitely been happening before that. I think, sure. Again, the way I feel about it now is that SolarWinds update, you know, pushing that malware down through the automatic update, I would be extremely, considering who the APT is, because we've got extensive experience with that specific APT, I would be extremely, extremely, extremely surprised if they've not used that same infrastructure approach to pushing out the malware via automatic updates for other vendors. I just think SolarWinds is the one we know about right now.
Okay.
Not to scare everybody on the meeting, but that's what I really think.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the honesty because I think, you know, we do need to consider several different facets here that we're working with. So a question that came through that I think is kind of interesting. Are you aware of any environments that have determined that they need to rebuild? And that's a question from Nick.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Six or so that I'm working with, about half of them have had to rebuild some parts of their environment. Now, to give you guys kind of a picture of what I'm doing, so I've got five or six big customers that I'm working with 24/7 kind of, but then I've got 10 or 12 smaller customers that have agreed to, I've got one Zoom meeting that these 10 or 12 smaller customers all connect to at once. And I give them like a daily update and say, look, you guys need to go do this. You need to do that. Here's some other things, because they can't afford to have me on like, retainer to where they get guaranteed 24-hour response and things like that, like the bigger ones. But, you know, I just said, look, here's what I'm going to do. There's 10 of you. I'm going to charge you this much per hour, and I'm going to spread that cost across all 10 of you. And they were all happy, like, yes, we'll happily take it. Other than, you know, otherwise they'd have to wait like a few weeks before I could even get to them. So that's kind of, for those of you that are also in this business, that's something that I'm doing that's working quite well, by the way. If you're looking at innovative ways to get to people faster.
Sure. Thanks for the insight there. We're going to ask a couple more questions. We don't want to make the meeting go too long for people here. I know some folks have had to jump. But again, we could probably go on for hours. So thanks to everyone who's submitting these questions. And we'll try to get to a couple more here. So let me go to the question here. Have you seen access to Internet of Things devices from this?
Am I allowed to answer that?
Okay.
Oh, I'm trying to see. Let's see. Kinda, but more of a bounce through. The IoT devices, the two that we've seen interacted with, we think they were not like a target. They were just something that they ended up hitting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. A question that I want to go back to from LinkedIn, has any information been released about the initial infection vector?
Yes, somewhat privately. Some of it has been released privately. And yes, not publicly though. The public stuff that you'll see, you go look at the SolarWinds website and look at the CISA website. That's about as much as you're going to get publicly right now.
Okay. So we will continue to wait and see and see if we can get more updates on that in the future.
I don't want to get kicked out of, you know, the Barnes Family Circle of Trust there by saying stuff that's not public yet.
Sounds good. We'll let you stay in that circle of trust. So I just have a couple of more that we're going to get to. Okay, so I think this question is back related to the certificates when we talked about revoking some of the certificates that some of the other industry organizations are doing. Does it only revoke trust from the infected version, or does it revoke all of the Orion installs?
Does it only the infected version or what now?
Does it only revoke trust from the infected version, or is it all Orion installs? Or do we know if there's an infected version, or do we just consider every version maybe infected?
Yeah, it's certificates that are for the infected ones. Like, it's not all of the SolarWinds certificates, if that's what they're asking.
Okay. I think that was what it is related to is, I saw another question that was related to it, and maybe this will be our last question before we moved on. So other SolarWinds products, should we be looking at how we use other products right now, or is this the only one we know of that we should be looking at?
Yeah, my recommendation, if it were my environment, and this is the direct advice that I'm giving all of the customers that I work with, is you really need to consider looking at all of your providers, like anyone that has equipment or software in your environment and they're doing automatic updates. This may be something that you look for. Now, we only have IOCs for the SolarWinds part now, but again, as this materializes, we're going to have more IOCs that we're going to be able to, you know, and when I say we, I don't mean me, I mean the industry as a whole, more IOCs that will be published that you can then import into the process that we just kind of went over and start looking that way as well. But as you start to learn more about your own environment, which hopefully this prompts some people to do that, what you will find is these IOCs are, you know, while they're specific to SolarWinds, in this case, the methodology is going to be the same. For example, we have one customer that had, once I finally got the SIM access that I needed 2 days ago, I created a dashboard and I was looking specifically for unsuccessful login attempts, right? Because in the world of security, when you see unsuccessful login attempts, a lot of them, that generally means that there is a breach or someone's trying to guess passwords or something like that. Well, there was a few accounts that had like 68,000 unsuccessful login attempts in like a 30-minute window. So of course, you know, I sounded the alarm like, hey, look, here's, you know, this is from that same server. This definitely looks like a horizontal movement attempt right here. You know, this many wrong guesses in that short amount of time. You've only got 3,000 successful logins in the last 24 hours, but from this one device with one account, you got 68,000 failed logins. And they freaked out, and then finally someone like in the IT department said, oh no, that's a known problem. We have a service that's critical that logs into two different accounts. One of them it successfully logs into, but the other one it can't successfully log into. We don't know why it can't log in, so it's we just let it run. So it's a situation like that to where, you know, optimization of your environment and knowing your environment becomes visibly and viscerally important when you're trying to deal with a situation like this, because that little thing right there costs us about 3 hours of running in circles trying to figure out how this malware was doing this, when actually it was one of their services that only these people had access to in this room. With that server that was sitting there constantly trying to log in, because
right.
These servers were in a place that no one has access to, right? It's not anything, nothing's supposed to really get in there. Stuff's only supposed to come out. So the fact that we saw these outbound, you know, 68,000 password or login attempts made us think, oh, somehow they got inside that as well, but it turned out not to be that.
Right.
So really, I say take this as a kind of an opportunity, just like, you know, we reset. Like, I've been eating better recently, right? I've been exercising more because this stuff's been getting out of hand, you know, sitting at home and doing it, and because of COVID and stuff. Take this as an opportunity to say, look, let me get my hands wrapped around my environment again. Let me get my knowledge back up of my environment and what's there, and start taking these techniques that we just use, and let's just put it out there. Start looking through traffic, finding IOCs that are very specific to my type of organization, and see if I see any of this stuff in there. And I think you may be surprised what you find.
Sure. Fantastic. Well, I'm going to wrap up our Q&A portion here. Wanted to touch base briefly before we end here. Obviously, Keetron is a fantastic instructor. We learned a ton from him in the last hour and a half here. If you are interested in learning more, this is what he referenced on InfoSec Skills. This is where you can do self-paced learning, and you can actually use Keetron's code EVANS50 to save 50% on your first month or year. So anything you want to tell us about that before we wrap up?
Yeah, so interestingly, I would definitely recommend just going ahead and getting the year because it's only $300, but with my code, you get it for $150. And what you see on the screen there is actually my incident response course that's related. It's exactly a mirror of the types of things that we just went over. Every tool that I just covered in this webinar, I cover in detail in that incident response course that you see on the screen there. It's about 15 hours of hands-on, like using Zeek, using Wireshark, using Volatility,
right,
following Zeek. So if you want to be able to do these things, if the webinar went too fast or watching the recording, you still have some hangups, go get the skills course, because these skills classes, the revenue and things from that, this is what gives me time to be able to do free webinars like this, is because that's how I, make money. So it frees me up to be able to spend time putting stuff like this together.
I hope you enjoyed today's webinar with Keetron and learned a lot about this breaking story. Just as a reminder, Keetron is prominently featured on our new interactive learning series, CyberWork Applied, featuring hands-on tutorials to teach you new cybersecurity skills and apply them to your career. And once again, it's free. To learn all about CyberWork Applied, just go to infosecinstitute.com/learn and get started today. Thanks once again to Keetron Evans, and thank you all for listening. We'll speak to you next week. How about some free cybersecurity training resources for you and your team? Just go to infosecinstitute.com/free to get ebooks, training guides, and more than 100 cybersecurity training courses, all free for CyberWork listeners. Go to infosecinstitute.com/free and start learning crucial new skills today.